order. Today is Thursday, March 3rd, 2011. First item on the agenda is a public hearing on House Bill 3041. Council.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. House Bill 41 is the first of several bills we'll have on today that have to do in some form with the abuse of animals. This one in particular has to do with the procedure that needs to be followed in order to impound an animal, take an animal away from an owner while a criminal action based on animal abuse is pending. Current ORS 167347 allows for the impoundment of abused animals to a county animal shelter or other animal care agency, but the filing can be done only by that agency or shelter. Proposed House Bill 3041 expands that ability so that a district attorney could make that filing for forfeiture of the animal on behalf of the county shelter as a part of the prosecutorial effort.
Thank you. Rob Bovet and Shannon Herman, please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity to speak with you about this bill. We provided a brief written testimony from...
You need to identify yourself for
that. Rob Bovet, District Attorney from Lincoln County, on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Provided written testimony from Dinah Vitalins, who requested this bill through Representative Olson, and then my confession on the backside. It's a brief confession because I drafted this statute in 1995, and I was thinking when I was drafting it that the entities that would want to petition for this relief would be county council and the local humane societies. Well, in some of the smaller counties, that's not the way it works. It really needs to be the DA that does it. Crook County is a perfect example. So my confession is I messed up in 1995. This is a technical correction. We really need to add the district attorneys as another group of folks that can.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Hello, I'm Sharon Harmon. I'm the director of the Oregon Humane Society. We are unaffiliated with any local or national humane organization. We really appreciate Mr. Bovet's efforts to provide a system that gets animals out of the system so that they aren't abused twice, first by the abuser, second time by the legal system having to wait 1 to even 2 years. Vicki Kittles is probably the best example of someone who had animals incarcerated for 2 years in a shelter environment. No animal improves after 2 years in a shelter. These cases are extraordinarily expensive, and we're talking about municipal animal services at $20 a day per animal for cost for board and regular care. It doesn't take many days for the cost of a single hoarding case, 45 animals, or the case we took in last week, 35 dogs, to amount to tens of thousands of dollars. This allows for quick the relief and getting the animals. Either the owner can provide a bond to care for the pets during the length, which is fine. The costs are covered. But if they can't, the animals are surrendered and are made available to find new homes. It's a good bill. We support House Bill 3041.
Okay, thank you. Are there any questions? Okay, thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3041. And open a public hearing, House Bill 3238, Council.
And thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. House Bill 3238 again pertains to the abuse of animals. Animal abuse in the first degree is committed if a person intentionally, knowingly, or recklessly causes serious injury to an animal or cruelly causes the death of an animal. This is normally a Class A misdemeanor. It becomes a Class C felony if the person has two or more previous convictions for animal abuse in the first degree or for a number of different domestic violence convictions, or if the person knowingly commits the act of animal abuse in the immediate presence of a child. This proposal would raise the severity of animal abuse in the first degree to level 6 on the sentencing guidelines grid.
Thank you. Heidi Maud and Sharon Herman again, please.
Thank you, chairs of the committee and members of the committee. My name is Heidi Moad, M-O-A-W-A-D. I'm a deputy district attorney in Multnomah County and speaking to you today on behalf of the Oregon District Attorneys Association. In the interest of full disclosure, I am also the daughter of co-chair Barker, so didn't want to seem like I was hiding that from anyone. As Mr. Knott already explained to you, the current law makes felony aggravated abuse and aggravated animal abuse a level 6 on the sentencing guidelines grid. Under current law, no matter what an individual's criminal history, they will receive probation as their sentence for committing two of the most serious crimes that I've encountered doing animal abuse cases in Multnomah County. This change from level 3 to level 6 does have some fiscal impact. However, I would note 2 years ago, I tried to get a similar law passed using the Oregon Criminal Justice Commission, and at that time we were asking for one to be a level 6 and one to be a level 8. In the interest of limiting the fiscal impact, we have scaled back our request to have both be a level 6. This leaves judicial discretion, so a judge, even in a situation where a person may fit into a presumptive prison gridlock, a judge could depart and give them probation anyway. Likewise, it gives judges more of an opportunity to sentence to lengthier jail times if they are giving probation. Give someone probation, revoke them, they would face a Department of Corrections sentence instead of a local jail sentence. And these are all things that I think are very appropriate under the circumstances. I want to tell you about two cases very quickly that I know about in Multnomah County. The first involved an underground wrestler trying to make a name for himself in Multnomah County, and so what he did was he took a bunny rabbit, he chewed the head of the bunny rabbit off and had his roommate photograph him as he chewed the head of the rabbit off, and he then took the torso of the dead rabbit, placed it down his pants, and simulated a sex act on the rabbit. The roommate and the defendant in the picture both went to trial and both received probationary sentences because that was all the judge could do. I personally handled a case where two young men lived in an apartment. They were couch surfing in an apartment, for lack of a better term. And when the renters of the apartment asked these two young men to leave perhaps revenge for being kicked out of the apartment, they scalded one of their kittens in a pot of boiling water, attempted to skin the kitten, and when that failed, hatcheted the kitten to death, and then threw it over a fence and left it there where it was recovered by animal control officers. These pictures are upsetting, but I do think it's important to show you the tail as it was skinned by these individuals, the kitten where it was, in fact, nearly beheaded by the hatcheting, and then I have just two x-rays of the kitten where you can see the multiple fractures that the kitten, a six-week-old kitten, sustained as it was hatcheted by these two individuals. So these are the kinds of cases we're talking about, not a case where someone maybe is over-disciplining an animal. I mean, these are serious, really awful cases, and I think the persons who commit these crimes deserve to have extended periods of supervision and, where appropriate, a prison sentence. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Sharon Harmon. I'm the director of the Oregon Humane Society. I'm unaffiliated with any local or national humane organization, and wow, pictures say 1,000 words. I saw your face looking at them.
I was not looking at them.
It's hard to escape the impact of photographs, but the stories still tell true. Our experience with people who perpetrate aggravated animal abuse are serious criminals. We have two cases in Washington County where we've provided forensic resources through our Animal Medical Learning Center. Both cases, the defendant beat up the girlfriend, threw her out of the house, and went back in. One slammed the kitten against the wall, the other stomped the puppy to death. These are not crimes of basic neglect. These are true malicious and killing of animals, and we need to get these people either under treatment, incarcerated, and protect the people they're going to work on next. We support House Bill 3238.
Thank you. Representative Long. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I assume that good animal husbandry is talking about recreational sports, hunting, and fishing?
Representative Wanda, I believe that's correct. I think any kind of animal care or licensed hunting would not fall under an aggravated animal abuse or felony animal abuse statute.
Representative Wong, members of the committee, that good animal husbandry is usually the exemption, the coverall for common livestock practices. There is a specific exemption for hunting and fishing, lawful hunting and fishing.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. On a happier note, several years ago, Ms. Harmon generously agreed to tour my daughter and her cousin and her little schoolmate through the Humane Society up there in Portland, and it was a great experience. Fortunately, we didn't take any puppies or kitties home, but I know there were some people with me that wanted to. I appreciate it. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Any further questions? Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3238. Open a public hearing on House Bill 3239.
Thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. The final of our animal abuse bills today is House Bill 3239, which requires a person convicted of sexual assault of an animal to register as a sex offender. The crime of sexual assault of an animal, which is when a person touches or contacts the mouth, anus, or sex organs of an animal or animal carcass for the purpose of arousing or gratifying the sexual desire of a person, is presently a Class A misdemeanor carrying a maximum penalty of a year of incarceration and a $6,250 fine, but does not currently require sex offender registration.
Thank you. 580. Heidi Mowad and Sharon Herman, please.
Ms. Chair, please tell me Heidi didn't bring any pictures for this one.
I did not remember. although I could have. I'm Heidi Mowad, M-O-A-W-A-D, with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and here on behalf of the Oregon District Attorney's Association. As Mr. Knott mentioned, this is a bill that would require people who sexually abuse animals to register as sex offenders. And while I personally do not ignore the gravity of such a requirement, I do believe it's justified in this case. There are studies that show an overlap between bestiality and other types of interpersonal violence, to include sexual violence against other human beings and children. I did have myself one case in Multnomah County involving the sexual assault of an animal. I did not bring photographs, but I do think it is important to tell you a little bit about the case, as disturbing as it is. This individual was arrested as a result of him uploading to the internet four videos of himself having sexual intercourse with his dog. He digitally penetrated the dog's anus. He penetrated the dog's anus with his penis, and he also videotaped himself ejaculating in the dog's face. These videos were the most disturbing things that I have ever seen in my 11-year career at the District Attorney's Office, though I recognize and I am grateful for the fact that I have not done any child pornography cases. I do think, though, that when you look at sexual assault of an animal and you consider sexual assault of a child, I don't compare the two. Certainly the gravity of the offense against the child is far more serious, but when you consider the victims are unable to physically defend themselves in any way, unable typically to report to anyone what has happened to them, there is a victimology there that I think the two have in common. And I did reach out to other people in my office and in the law enforcement community to seek their input on this. There is another case currently pending in Multnomah County, so I can't discuss it with any great detail, but it was in the media recently. Another man videotaped whipping a dog, holding a dog down, and having sexual intercourse with a dog. And there's currently a case pending in Multnomah County as well, where a woman has confessed to sexually abusing a one-year-old child, a 15-year-old child, and a dog. Additionally, I asked members of Intercept, the organization that does the child pornography task force here in Oregon, if they encounter bestiality videos in their child pornography cases. And one of them did sort of a quick search this morning for me and found that of the 30 what they deemed the top child pornography downloaders in the state of Oregon, this is from all across the state of Oregon, 13 of those 30 had images of bestiality as well. So there is definitely an overlap between these paraphilias, and I believe that it is appropriate to require someone who does this to an animal to register as a sex offender. Thank you.
Members of the committee, Chair Barker, co-chair Barker, co-chair Krieger, forget my manners here. I'm Sharon Harmon, Director of the Oregon Humane Society. Thank you so much, Smollett, for providing that information. I couldn't do it any better. I remember when the first time we tried to make sexual assault of an animal a crime, it was met with lots of sniggering and jokes, and it's true. You know, our society has two views on this issue. It's either nothing to worry about, it's just boys, it's just the farm boys, or this is a serious crime on the other side. Either way, we didn't want to talk about it because it's socially repugnant. And it's what makes finding these guys difficult until YouTube came up, until they started posting pictures of themselves. We have some recent cases where the interlap is clear. In April 2010, in a child pornography investigation, they uncovered also photographs of them assaulting their dogs. Same people, same crime, different victims. These people need to be followed. You need to know if you're renting a house to them. You need to know if you're trusting them with your pet sitter. This information needs to be made public. They need to be tracked. We need to make sure that their next victim isn't a child. Their next victim isn't one of intimidation and force. And it is a serious crime. And I appreciate your attention to this, and thank you for holding a hearing. I hope you'll pass House Bill 3239.
Chairs Barker, Krieger, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Vi Beatty. I'm the manager of the Oregon State Police Sex Offender Registry for the state of Oregon. I'm here in a neutral position. I just did a little bit of research and wanted to share my findings. I checked with our sister states to see if bestiality or sexual assault of an animal is a registerable offense in those states. Washington, California, and Utah are all no. Nevada's not gotten back to me. And Idaho does under crimes against nature. That particular statute in Idaho also includes sodomy charges because that's where it's found. We also did a search to see how many offenders we would be talking about adding to the registry with this particular crime. In the entire chapter of 167, which is where this is located, there were 110 convictions found, and that also includes gambling convictions, tobacco crime convictions, all animal offense convictions, as well as person trafficking and some things along those lines. So we're not talking about more than a handful of registrations. So as far as a fiscal impact to the registry itself and to law enforcement generally, there doesn't appear to be anything.
Thank you. Any questions of the panel? Thank you very much. Brutal testimony. We appreciate you coming forward and doing that.
Thank you, Co-Chair Barker and Co-Chair Krieger, members of the committee. Gail Meyer on behalf of the Oregon Criminal Defense Lawyers Association. Before I get going, I do want to affirm for the committee that I am a pet owner, and I do respect the rights of animals, and I do appreciate the gravity of the conduct that we're talking about. I'm addressing here the bill that would require registry on the sex offender registry for these instances. I would point out to the committee that this is an expansion of the use of the registry. In the past, the registry has been designed for the purpose of forewarning the public and be an aid to law enforcement for the protection of children and for the protection of humans, adults. This bill, 3239, would apply equally to juveniles. So juveniles who are adjudicated for these crimes also would be put on the registry. Our laws right now presume that if you're obligated to register as a registered sex offender, the presumption is you would register for life. And while certain persons have an opportunity to petition to get off the registry, the presumption is that you would be a lifetime registrant. It is a really, really big deal to have to register as a sex offender. It can be very destabilizing, not just for the offender, but for the offender's family. And the reason is housing, primarily. We had a hearing over in the Senate where persons who represented screening businesses, these were businesses that lease apartment owners would hire out to please screen this tenant to see whether or not we want to rent to them. They do automatically always check the registry. If there's anyone in that applicant's family, the juvenile, the adult, the 19-year-old son, whatever, if there's anyone who would be residing within that unit who is on the sex offender registry, most apartment owners will not rent to them. Generally, for anyone under supervision, for a sex offense cannot live in a residence where there are children. So if you're on supervision, you really hope that you have a family member who owns their home and that there are no children in that home, that you can live there. If you don't, you really don't have anywhere to go. You really are very destabilized.
And so sometimes you hang out with a friend of a friend in a
trailer court or something, but it's very destabilizing for the entire family, which can be a counter influence in terms of supervising these individuals. I did read some of the studies, too, about is there a link between sexual assaults against animals and a link then to is it predictive of sexual harm against humans? And I never saw anything that was really all that clear. What I do know that amongst juveniles, if juveniles are offending in this way, if they're offending against animals, what it is it's a good indicator that they, the juvenile, is a victim of sexual assault. But it's not necessarily predictive that that juvenile will sexually assault against a human. So I would encourage the committee to exercise great caution in expanding here what we're using the registry for. I don't know that if some pet shop is going to sell a puppy to someone that they're going to check the registry. I mean, I don't know really the purpose of having them register. I do know that I worry also about the notice provisions. Right now, if you're a registered sex offender, you get notice. Well, if you're convicted of offense, that's a sex crime, you get notice by everybody, the judge, the supervising officer, everyone. You have an obligation to report as a registered sex offender. And likewise, if someone's a registered sex offender out of state and they move, they're pretty much told and informed, you have an obligation to register within 10 days of arriving within Oregon. Here in this instance, Oregon would be coming out of the gate. We'd be on the vanguard of doing this. And our neighboring states don't, except for Idaho in some circumstances, which include crimes against humans, but
there's no real notice to these people. So as 3239 is
written, if someone were to move into this state or have already been convicted of this, they would be in violation, have committed a serious crime, failure to register as a sex offender, but they wouldn't have had anyone tell them they're obligated to do so. Finally, I do note that this bill, as drafted, is written retroactively, so it would apply to persons who were convicted before, on, or after the effective date of this act. I'll observe that in most instances when we have added sex crimes to the registry, it has not been retroactive. And again, I do think that that is a problem. I have to remind myself quite frankly, of the constitutionality of that. I know that if you're currently on supervision, it's okay to retroactively tell that person they have to register. I can't recall the law as to whether or not the supervisor period is now expired, whether you can go back and make them register. But in any event, I do worry about the notice provisions because someone could violate this and never have known that they had that obligation.
Any questions for Ms. Meyer? Thank you. Close the public hearing on House Bill 3239. Open a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 353. Council.
Chairs, members of the committee, Senate Bill 353 is this session's Scrivener's Bill. Thank you, Representative. It corrects grammar and punctuation errors in statute. It deletes obsolete references and restores omissions. It conforms language to existing statutes in legislative style. And as I said, it comes in every session. It alternates between the chambers. It started out on the Senate side this session. It passed out of the Senate Judiciary Committee unanimously and off the Senate floor, also unanimously.
Okay. Any questions for counsel? Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 353. Open.
Chair Barker.
Sorry. Do you have any problems with this bill?
I believe Mr. Rutlinger is here to testify if there were any questions.
If you
Chief
like
Counsel from Legislative Council.
Sure.
Or, excuse me, Chief Editor from Legislative Council.
Mr. Co-Chair's members, Ted Reitlinger from the Legislative Council's office. I'd be happy to talk about the bill. If you have questions.
I'll return. I've got it. The public hearing's reopened.
Okay. Thank you. Ted Reitlinger from Legislative Council. I can tell you a little bit about the bill if you'd like. I can try to answer any questions that you have if you'd like.
Can you just briefly, again, just briefly describe the bill?
Sure. Senate Bill 353 is what we call the Reviser's Bill. It's a routine bill that we, the Legislative Council's office, produce every session. As was described, its goal is to simply correct errors and omissions in the ORS, to update references, to remove things that are obsolete, and conform things to legislative form and style. The main goal of this bill is not to make any substantive changes to Oregon law. You can see Section 1 of the bill is a section that we've amended every session since 1985, and it specifically says that the goal is not to alter the legislative intent or purpose of statutory sections. It's simply a bill designed to correct mistakes. And with that, I'd be happy to try and answer any questions.
Any questions? Thank you very much. Close the public hearing on Senate Bill 353 and open a work session on Senate Bill 353.
Mr. Chair, I move Senate Bill 353 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves Senate Bill 353 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Are there any questions? Any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Schaffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Blisman?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Motion carries. Would that not be a good one for the consent calendar? I don't, or should we explain it?
Consent.
It'll move to put that on the consent calendar. Work session. Closed. Open a work session on House Bill 2463. Council.
And co-chairs, I would note that's Mr. Taylor's, and he arrives. Just a moment,
okay.
Please.
So we have work session open on 2463.
Chairman of the committee, House Bill 2463 was before you last week. You've already adopted the Dash 3 amendments. The only thing you have to do is pass the bill, if you so choose. Modifies the crime of failure to report child pornography. Requires processor photographic images and computer technicians to report child pornography. It exempts good faith reports from civil or criminal liability.
Very there any questions from the committee?
Mr. Co-Chair, I don't have a question, but I just want to make clear that it's my understanding of the bill as amended that it does not reduce in any way the scope of mandatory reporters under Oregon statute, that it is directed only at the issue of liability. Because that was, as I understand, that was the purpose that the amendment was added because the original drafting inadvertently reduced the scope of who was required to report.
Chairman of the committee, the law currently as it relates to people who process photographers puts a duty on them, and the amendments was to keep that duty the same.
And
specifically, without regard to whether they are operating for pay or in a voluntary capacity.
It was to cover the technicians from the some of the outlying utilities. If their employee went to fix somebody's computer, came to your home to fix your computer, saw something on there and reported it, and for example, you were doing a PhD on child pornography, you might have a real reason to have it, so you couldn't sue him. That was the liability protection we were looking for. It's part of the bill.
I just want to make sure that if this bill becomes law, processors of photographic images are still mandatory reporters regardless of whether they are performing that processing in a volunteer or paid capacity.
Thank you, Representative Nolan. That's correct. I'll accept the motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2463 to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Olson moves House Bill 2463 to the floor with the due pass. Is there any discussion?
Have we already adopted the amendment?
We did.
Oh, forgive me. I'm not paying attention. Thank you.
Right.
Call the roll, please.
I'm sorry, Chair.
One moment, please.
Okay. Actually, to Representative Nolan's point, I wonder if lines 17 and 18, if this is the concern. It says a processor of photographic images or computer technician who, while acting within the scope of employment or profession, reasonably believes the processor or technician. So, I'm sorry, I missed earlier on. I was listening, but I don't think I quite. So you're concerned that you want the reporting requirement to be even when not acting within the scope of the profession? Is that, if I may ask the member a question, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It is my understanding, Mr. Co-Chair, Representative Hicks, it's my understanding that current law makes processors of photographic images mandatory reporters under any circumstance when they are processing photographic images.
Right.
And I just wanted to clarify that nothing in this bill, as amended, changes that mandatory reporting requirement on processors of photographic images.
Okay. I don't know about that one.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the best thing to do would be look in page one of the language that's been removed. A person commits a crime of failure to report child pornography if the person, in the course of processing or producing a photograph, motion picture, videotape, or other visual recording, either commercially or privately, has reasonable cause to believe. And if you then go down to the processor of photographic images, and the amendments, the dash of the amendments, take out the language for compensation, and then below they take up while acting within the scope of employment. And that would be the...
Okay. The non-amended, I'm sorry. So, yeah, I was still looking at the non-amended piece of it then. Okay, so that's my impression too in that case.
Okay, thank you.
Sorry, okay.
Call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan?
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative Wan?
Aye.
Representative Quisman?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker.
Aye.
Motion carries, and we'll have Representative Gelser will be the carrier. Open a public, work session on House Bill 2312.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2312 comes to you from Representative Tomei. It holds a fraternal organization that is a charitable corporation not liable for any damages arising out of providing eyeglasses, hearing aids, or other mechanical devices to persons with no charge. Chair, members of the committee, these provisions apply as it relates to eyeglasses if there's been an inspection by an ophthalmologist or optometrist.
Chair,
members of the committee, we've already adopted the Dash 4 amendments. The last time we were here on the 25th of February, we were waiting for the fiscals. The fiscals are here. They're either no fiscal or minimal fiscal impact.
Okay, any discussion?
Mr. Chair, the ophthalmologists and optometrists did have some problems with the original bill, but they're okay with the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion? Call the roll, please. Oh, I'm sorry. Wait a minute. I need a motion.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2312 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Tomei moves House Bill 2312 to the floor with a due pass. Is there any objection? Hearing none, call the roll, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair, members of the committee. And I would note up front that 2702, we did not have a Dash 1 amendment at the last time that we spoke about this. We do have a Dash 1 now. If anyone doesn't have it, let me or staff know, and we'll deliver it to you. All comments will refer to that. This bill prohibits the court from denying the petition of a defendant who would otherwise be eligible for participation in a driving under the influence diversion program, except for the fact that the defendant is a person who is engaged in active military service. It extends the time for diversion completion for people engaged in active military service, allows them to appear at a show cause hearing telephonically if possible, and if that is not possible, allows for that show cause hearing to be stayed until their military service ceases to be problematic, and allows a person serving in active military service to satisfy the terms of their diversion obligation by completing a comparable program elsewhere. The amendment in particular clarifies that there is a burden on them to demonstrate that there is no comparable treatment program available. And also on page 3, line 5, clarifies that there is a 180-day extension, but that 180-day extension is from the ending date of the original diversion period.
Any questions?
I do not have a copy of that amendment. When was it distributed?
On the drive. I didn't put copies off because it was not on the drive. It's on your computer.
On your computer.
Under the committee meeting folder.
Thank you.
I need a motion to adopt Dash 1s.
So moved.
Resident Tomei moves the Dash 1s. Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Need a motion here to for the bill. We just adopted the.
Oh, excuse me.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2702 as amended to the House floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Olson moves House Bill 2702 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Seeing none, call the roll, please.
Representative Nolan.
Yes.
Representative Olson. Aye. Representative Tomei. Aye. Representative Wan. Aye. Representative Wisnik. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Hicks. Aye. Co-Vice Chair Garrett. Aye. Co-Chair Krieger. Aye. Co-Chair Barker. Aye. Motion carries. And Representative Olson, if you'll carry that for us, thank you. Open the work session on House Bill 2721.
And thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. House Bill 2721 eliminates reliance on spiritual treatment as a defense to certain crimes in which the victim is under 18 years of age, this being negligent homicide and other homicide-type crimes that are more serious than that. And I would note for the record, and again, if anyone is lacking this, please let us know and we'll get it. The fiscal impact statement came in late for this, but it did come in. There is a narrative attached to it, but the ultimate conclusion is that there's no anticipated substantive increase in cases due to this bill, and the resulting fiscal impact would be minimal. If anyone has any inquiries on that, I'd be happy to expound on it further.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2721 to the floor with the DuPass recommendation.
I'm not going to add the cost. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Representative Tomei, I'll spill 20, almost, maybe I am. 2721 to the floor with the DuPass. Is there any objection, any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Representative Olson?
Aye.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Tomei?
Aye.
Representative
Wisnett?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Harris?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair Barker?
Aye.
Motion carries. Representative Tomei, would you carry that one?
Please.
Thank you very much. Is there any further business to come before the committee? Flip side, it is.
One more.
Open a work session on House Bill 3142. Council.
And thank you, co-chairs, members of the committee. House Bill 3142 explicitly includes youth correction facility staff within the statutory definition of staff member for purposes of assault of the third degree and aggravated harassment. The fiscal, again, was received right at the line. There is minimal expenditure impact estimated.
Okay, thank you. Is there any discussion?
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3142 to the floor with a DuPass recommendation.
Representative Hicks moves House Bill 3142 to the floor with a DuPass. Is there any discussion? Call the roll, please.
Yes.
Representative Olson? Aye. Representative Shoffler? Aye. Representative Tomei? Aye. Representative Wisnett?
Excuse
me.
Co-Vice Chair
Hicks?
Aye.
Co-Vice Chair Garrett?
Aye.
Co-Chair Krieger?
Aye.
Co-Chair
Barker?
Aye. Motion carried. Representative Hicks, will you carry that bill for us, please? Is, now, is there any further business? Seeing none, meeting adjourned.
Good job, Chair.
Get them out.